Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Today was women's semi-final day. It didn't last an awful long time because, frankly, Serena Williams was in awesome form. She smashed her way past Elena Vesnina in just 48 minutes, and Angelique Kerber wasn't too far behind, an hour and 12 minutes for her to defeat Venus. So, we know the women's final lineup. Myself, David Law, joined by Simon Briggs, Catherine Whittaker, and a very special guest today, the BBC's tennis correspondent, Mr. Russell Fuller. Russell, how are you doing?
It's a privilege, David.
The pleasure is all ours. Well, first of all, we're just going to start with Simon Briggs, because Simon's got to go off and write something enormous for The Telegraph. What are you going to write about today, Simon? You've got plenty to choose from, haven't you? You've got men's semi-finals coming up tomorrow with Andy Murray against Thomas Berdych. You've got Roger Federer. He's playing tomorrow, isn't he, against Milos Raonic. That one's first. But the semis today probably went the way I think we expected.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Venus one. I let Jim White do the Serena one, and I was a little bit rushing trying to finish my salad in order to get out on centre court because it didn't take quite as long as I had anticipated. I guess that was a disappointing match from the centre court crowd. Some of my friends were actually in the crowd for the Venus match and said they enjoyed that. It wasn't world class. Venus didn't play her top level, but it was okay.
It was world class in terms of the performance of Angelique Kerber, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kerber played pretty well. I mean, certainly when she got a serve going in the second set, she looked like she was playing a good rounded game. I think she'll have to serve that well again against Serena to stay in the match. I mean, Serena's looked so good, hasn't she? I mean, when was the last time she looked this good? Probably last year's Wimbledon. I wouldn't have thought that she's been as dominant since then.
No. This was a return to form, wasn't it, Russ? In terms of her game level, but also the zen appears to have come back.
Yes, she's seemed very much in control, hasn't she? Particularly in the quarterfinals and the semifinals. There's been little in the way of drama because she's just been playing so well and serving so well, and the belief is there as well. One tough match against Christina McHale, which went to three sets, but as Simon said, we normally expect at least one match in the first week. Williams will have to come from a set and a breakdown to win the match. And it just hasn't happened to the same extent. And given the fact we're here on the grass, she's a six-time Wimbledon champion. Whereas I thought there was a fair chance that Kerber could beat her in Australia, and I think she could do it again here, I would definitely make Williams favourite for the final.
Yeah, she's probably helped by this surface more than ever, isn't she, Catherine? And I suspect her eyes, she'll never admit this, but she does not like losing to anybody. And I saw this against Kuznetsova a few weeks ago, that having been beaten by her, she was even more dialed in to get that bit of revenge.
I think this is a very different Serena Williams to the one that lost to Kerber in that Australian Open final, and the slightly bizarre reaction from her in the moments immediately following the defeat, which have been interpreted by different people in different ways. But I certainly think if you were to see the same scenario on Saturday of her losing to Kerber, I don't think you'd see the same smiles and magnanimity. I think this is Serena Williams of this time last year, Serena Williams with the fierce fight in her eyes, and I think she's going to win on Saturday.
I noticed, Simon, in her press conference just now, when asked about the 22 slams thing, she just brushed it aside immediately. I don't think about that anymore. And having watched the documentary and having seen her three times now come up short in the latter stages of Grand Slam finals, or certainly two finals and a semi, I get the feeling that she is playing a bit of a mental game with herself here, just to try to take that pressure off.
Well, she always says, when I lose, that's when I learn. And maybe what she has learned in the last 6 months is that she has been reaching too eagerly for that prize. It's a pretty big one, isn't it, to equal Steffi Graf's record. If she can maybe move it ahead in the next slam or two, if she can get back to where she was in the early part of last year, win Wimbledon, win the US Open, where she's been so strong the last 5-6 years, then she could be out into open water and making new records again. I mean, I thought she was really struggling a couple of weeks ago, but it's amazing how this game just keeps on confounding you.
Yeah, it does turn, doesn't it? Russell, the Grand Slam finals that she's lost this year, you've commentated on them for BBC Five Live, and did ahead of them, did you see what ended up happening? Did you see it coming at all? I mean, or was it as much of a shock? I mean, certainly the Australian Open was a huge shock to me. I wasn't in Paris. Did that feel like a shock as well?
I think that felt like a bigger shock than the French Open final against Garbiñe Muguruza, because we just didn't know whether someone like Kerber, who'd had a very, very good 2015, let's not forget, it wasn't just a flash in the pan, would have the mindset and the belief that she could beat Williams in a Grand Slam final after she'd been so dominant the previous year. Once that had happened, and because Williams had a very stop-start year between Melbourne and Roland Garros, I think the way Garbiñe Muguruza was playing, I thought she was the favourite for that French Open final. So clearly there is belief amongst certain players in the world, if they're on their game, that they can beat Williams. I think it's an even bigger ask here because it's Wimbledon.
Now, Venus Williams wasn't looking obviously too happy with life straight afterwards, neither was Elena Vesnina. But certainly the most depressed figure that I've seen today is Goran Ivanišević. And I had opportunity to speak to him for BBC Radio 5 Live. Just have a little listen to this interview. And I really didn't know how to start it. Goran, I don't know what to say. How are you feeling?
It's not for the radio how I feel. Bad. I felt like this last time, 98, when I lost the final against Sampras. I mean, he feels worse than me, but as a coach, this is painful. Painful, but, you know, life goes on, and hopefully he learns something from this match and takes the positive things, and then he's going to be okay. This match can hurt you, but he can help you, so hopefully the option A is going to help him, and but it's going to hurt for a long time.
I saw you in the box there, and I mean, we were all suffering with you on his behalf. Obviously, Federer very popular, but I mean, did you think he'd got it?
Sure, he was playing amazing tennis from the first round. I saw he has a chance, and especially when Djokovic lost, I saw him that he has a chance to go to the final in that part of the draw, and he was really. It's the first time he plays tennis like he did in US Open 2 years ago. He's confident. But, you know, when you play guys like Roger, Andy, Novak, you need to play all the time like that. You can't, for a second, you cannot think. You need to be aggressive. You need to believe in those things. And unfortunately, he let Roger back into the match, and he pays the price. 3 match points, 2 match points on the second serve. A lot of chances, too many chances. You can't do that against Roger Federer. That's his living room, you know. And sometimes when you come to the person's living room, sometimes you don't have to be polite, you know. You have to be not polite guest. So in the end, he was very polite. And Roger is Roger, one of the greatest, for the moment, the greatest. And so I wish him all the best. You know, I'm a big fan of Roger, and so hopefully he wins.
If you put a put aside your obvious disappointment, understandable disappointment, and Marin's for a second, what Roger Federer is doing here at 34, it's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
It is. Like I say, I'm a huge fan. I know Roger since he was junior, and to see him playing like that, coming back from two sets to love down, being in the semis with his, you know, buddy holding up or not, and he's living his dream. That's what he said yesterday. His dream is still on. Hopefully he wins two more matches and it will be great for him to win a Grand Slam. For me, favorite is Andy to win the whole thing. But, you know, Roger, tomorrow is going to be tough. But, you know, that will be a great story.
Well, you know Milos well, and you probably know his game style well. Okay, you were a left-hander, but it's not that dissimilar, is it, from what he does to what you used to do. How do you see it going, that match tomorrow?
Oh, it's a tight match, 50-50, I say. Milos improved a lot. You know, he's just doing everything to be better and better. It took John to help him. And you can see Milos, confident, aggressive. He's not scared to hit the ball. He's going to go for the shots. If he serves well, it's going to be very tough. So that's why I say 50-50. Crowd is going to be behind Roger. But Milos believes he can do it. Milos, this is his chance, and why not? You know, he's a young guy.
And he's got John McEnroe as a coach. Did you ever think you would see John McEnroe as a coach?
Yes, because, first of all, he was one of the greatest, and I think you can learn a lot from John. First of all, he won this tournament a lot of times. He's a great commentator, but that is a great coach. He can tell you a lot of smart things, little things that can help you a lot. And I think Milos has improved a lot. He showed that in Queens. He's playing better. Like I say, he's not afraid to hit the ball. He's going to hit tomorrow. He's not going to rally a lot. He's going to be aggressive, come to the net. And we see what's going to happen.
You mentioned for you, Andy's still the favourite. He has lost his last five matches against Roger Federer. First of all, do you think Thomas Burdick can get in the way, or do you think that's a relatively straightforward match?
It's not a straightforward match, and it's never straightforward semi-finals, but Andy is very confident, playing well already from the French. Honestly, I thought he's going to win French this year. He was so good. Maybe these first two matches cost him five sets in the end. But look at the Queens, looking here, very confident, very strong. He knows that he's his chance, he knows that he's playing well, he knows that he's close for his second Wimbledon title. And he knows that he's no Mr. Djokovic there. I know that he lost five times against, last five times against Roger, but I think he just sees himself in the final. And, well, let's wait for tomorrow. I think that match may be four sets and Andy, but Roger and Raonic is, I don't know, to be honest, 50-50. I would like Roger to win, but it's 50-50.
Goran, thanks ever so much for talking to us. I feel like giving you a hug. It's hard to watch that yesterday, but anyway, you know, as you said, it was a great match, and maybe next time.
Maybe next time. Thanks.
So there is Goran Ivanišević, and as you can hear, he was absolutely devastated on behalf of Marin Cilic and for himself. I remember past matches that Cilic has lost, he's taken a couple of days to recover from them. But also, Simon, he was talking there about the immense respect he has for Roger Federer, how he thinks that is a 50-50 match between Raonic and Federer, but that he ultimately thinks it's going to be Andy Murray that mops up here and comes through. Is that the feeling that you get? Do you think that which of those do you think that Murray, if he gets through, is going to have to face eventually?
Yeah, it's going to be a tight one. I was saying earlier, actually, with Russell, we were talking on the BBC, and I said that the best scenario for Andy might be a five-set win for Roger, because if Roger did...
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a T-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Play back-to-back five sitters on his way to the final, you might think that that would begin to tell on his physique. You know, the guy's going to be 35 soon. So Andy really needs to lock on tomorrow and not mess about. You know, he wasn't at his best against Songa. He didn't hit the forehand. You know how I get obsessed with Andy's forehand. That's my barometer.
I did enjoy your description in the Telegraph today. What was it? I said
if he's banging it down like a barman serving a beer tankard, that's good. And if he's serving it like a wine waiter, all so delicate and careful, and then he's in trouble. And that's kind of how it felt, certainly in the period when Songa got very ahead of him in the third and fourth set. You know, Songa was playing those little slices low down, and Andy's forehands were landing short, and then Songa was teeing off with a gigantic winner on the forehand side on the next shot. So it was I don't think that Burdich will try that tactic because he's not a slicer by nature, but Murray can't really afford to be loose tomorrow. I think he needs to get through and maybe take advantage of the fact that in theory he's got the easier semi-final. In theory, the Raonic Federer one could be more sapping.
Simon, thank you for your contribution as always here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph. Simon's going to go off and write those voluminous amounts of words that will eventually be available to you on the website and in the newspaper tomorrow. Catherine Whittaker is here alongside Russell Fuller from BBC Radio 5 Live. Goran, you know well, Catherine, and I mean, he was inconsolable. Honestly, when I first said, Goran, can we have a quick chat on the radio? He said, well, I don't know what to say. I have nothing to say. And eventually we got chatting. But that will have hurt both him and Marin Cilic, won't it? But again, another extraordinary achievement for Federer, who incidentally I saw earlier today and just walked past, you know, shaking hands with everybody, just hanging out, looking as though he'd been through about half an hour's match, not 4 hours. And it's going to be fascinating tomorrow, isn't it?
It really is. I was sitting alongside Thomas Enquist in the Live at Wimbledon studio earlier, and he is playing Legends doubles with Goran Ivanišević this week, and they had to go out and play yesterday evening. And I caught some glimpses of that match, and it was beyond any exhibition tennis I've ever seen. It was almost like Goran had to slip into like crazed clown mode in order to cope with the desolate emotions that were coursing through his veins. And I asked Thomas about that. I said, you know, was he just sort of past caring by that point? And he said, absolutely not. In the locker room before, he was a broken man. And then suddenly, you know, like a real pro, it has to be said, really managed to turn it on for the crowds that had come to see him play doubles. So I feel for Goran because the game plan was a good one. It worked. As I said yesterday, Cilic's level didn't dip. He played probably the second or third best match of his life, the best one outside of that US Open, and he still lost. And I'm not sure what he could say to Marin after that. I mean, that's a tough gig.
Well, great first answer, I thought, from Goran, that he said, that's the worst I've felt since 1998 when I lost in the final to Sampras, having led it. I mean, that says it all, really, doesn't it, Russ?
And I can remember how crushed he was when Marin Cilic led Novak Djokovic by 2-1, also in the quarterfinals a couple of years ago. And he joined us on BBC Radio for the semi-final, and he wasn't quite the usual Goran. So I can only imagine what he felt like today after a match which his man was so close to winning and didn't do an enormous amount wrong, did he? Maybe just got a little bit shaken up by the fact that Federer saved those three break points when he was love 40 down at 3-3 in the third set. But it was all about Federer and the way he played. I had that match down as a 50-50 match before it started. I've got Raonic-Federer down as 50-50. It's going to be so fascinating to see whether Federer can play to that sort of mental and physical intensity required again. I know he's played quite a few matches on grass in the run-up, 7 matches in Halle and Stuttgart, and then he played very well through the first 4 rounds now. So what's that in total? 12 matches on the grass. But he hasn't played a 5-set match before yesterday since he beat Gael Monfils in the US Open nearly 2 years ago. So how's he going to back it up? We'll see.
And psychologically, Catherine, it's a fascinating one for me, Federer against Raonic, because Raonic has gone through so many changes over the last 6-8 months. Obviously, got extra coaches and so forth on board. But if you go back 2 years and the absolute thumping that Roger Federer dished out to him, what's the biggest thing that's going to come over this match? Is it going to be that memory that maybe inhibits him? Or is he going to play well and Federer's going to be shocked by the level of improvement? I mean, nobody knows, do they, really?
I think the answer is no to both of those things. I think it's going to be a completely different match to what we saw 2 years ago, but I don't think Federer is going to be remotely surprised by that. I think Federer is sort of giddy with excitement about what happened yesterday. He said he seemed delighted that he'd been taken to 5 sets. He said, I'm so pleased that my body has been physically tested and I now discover that it's up to it. Because I guess you just don't know until you're in that situation. There's no other controlled circumstances in which to test it other than the real thing. He said, yeah, he seems just utterly brimming with confidence. Now, saying that in the press conference room and taking that onto court against Milos Raonic, who's probably been the second best grass court player of this season, is a different thing. I think it's 51-49 in Federer's favour, but it's not going to be a 4-4-4 like it was 2 years ago, for sure.
I'd probably go about the same there, Russ, 51-49. I mean, you can make a compelling argument either way, couldn't you? So let's ask you. You're the BBC's tennis coverage. You know what's going to happen. Tell us.
Okay, I know. I've seen the result. No. I'm going to go 51-49 to Raonic. Just to be a little bit different. I think part of me thinks if anyone has the slight edge, it might just be Raonic tomorrow. We know he's going to come forwards a lot. That's one thing that he's been trying to do all season, not just since John McEnroe came on board. McEnroe's also been talking about making sure that Raonic's demeanour is that much more positive on court. He didn't really explain what that meant. I don't know whether it means he has to beat his chest like Tarzan or stick out his chest like Superman.
He's certainly lightened up a bit. I think Catherine and I noticed this at Queen's. He's much more happy to have a chat away from the court and just smile a bit more, frankly. He looks a little bit freer.
And I think that's probably what McEnroe's getting at, isn't it? On the court, make sure that body language is a little bit more positive to perhaps slightly intimidate your opponent. But he's got the game. If he hadn't had that groin strain later on in the semi-final against Andy Murray in Melbourne, he may well have beaten him instead of losing in 5 sets. And he lost a bit of time after that, didn't he? A few weeks away from the tour, took him a while to hit his straps. Clay is not his strongest surface. But when you look at that start to the season and the way he's played on grass, then you have to be looking at him in 2016, outside those established names we've been talking about for years, as the next best player out there. And he's proved to be better than some of those. So I think he's a real threat to Federer.
Could be a long one. Could be hours of action and entertainment. And then it'll be Andy Murray again up against Thomas Burdick. It's always that straight. He was talking about it in his BBC Sport website column today, Andy Murray, what it's like waiting for the match before you to end, and how he'd got up a couple of times ready to start the preparation for the match and then had to stop again. And I suspect that could end up being the same situation here.
Very much so. I mean, I don't expect that to trouble him at all. I mean, he did remarkably well, I thought, to deal with coming onto that empty, energy-sapped centre court yesterday. I had visions of potentially happening to him what happened to Songa at the French Open a couple of years ago when he had to follow that Nadal Djokovic 9-7 in the fifth match onto court, and the Philippe Chatrier Arena was completely sapped of all energy, and that sort of reflected into Songa himself. I feared for a moment that that could happen to Murray, but it didn't. He coped with it very, very well, so I'm sure he'll deal with it just fine, but it's certainly a scenario that he'll be very, very conscious of. I think Andy's going to not cruise tomorrow, but I don't think there's going to be a moment where it feels in doubt.
Any drama for you, Russ, tomorrow for Andy Murray?
I think, as always, that first set will be very important for Thomas Berdych. He won the first set of their Australian Open semi-final at the start of last year. Really feisty atmosphere, wasn't it, inside the arena? That was a lot of fun because Danny Valverde, who had been working so closely with Andy Murray for so many years, that partnership had come to an end, and Valverde had linked up with Berdych in the close season. And Murray and Berdych are not soulmates. Let's just leave it at that. So there was a bit of spice in that match. Kim Sears wore that famous T-shirt, having been caught out using some pretty... Now, that was in the final, wasn't it? In the final, she came up with that T-shirt saying, warning, contains explicit material, because there had been a suggestion, lip readers extraordinaire around the world, that she'd been giving a little bit of abuse to those in Thomas Berdych's box. So it was really feisty. Berdych won the first set, but once Murray got back into the match, he won it fairly comfortably. He's now won 9 sets in a row against Berdych. You feel he's got his number, but Wimbledon semi-final, so much on the line, Djokovic out of the equation, I don't think you can take anything for granted.
It was the moment, I think, that it just reminded me as well, the worst thing you can possibly do to Andy Murray is butt heads with him and make it personal, because he seems to become a better player when he's angry.
Yes, I think he picked a fight with Fergus Murphy, the umpire, in the quarterfinal yesterday when Songa was coming back so magnificently in that fourth set in particular. I mean, he wasn't being particularly hostile towards the umpire, but he was just picking a fight here and there, wasn't he, about the ability or the inability to challenge because the umpire thought he'd been too late. And we know it fires him up. It puts fire in the belly, and it's part of the man he is. So, yes, if I've got a cause, I will exploit it.
Finally, Russell, we may not get to speak to you again this week, certainly not tomorrow. So let's have the winners. Let's have the winners of both men's and women's singles from you.
Serena Williams and Andy Murray. And do you want a reason why?
Yeah.
I'm hoping it'll be a very competitive women's final, but I do make Williams favourite for this one, even though I was less sure in Australia and in Paris. And I think Andy Murray to beat Milos Raonic in the final, but I'm really not sure about who's going to be in the final. I just do think, all things being equal, because of the way Murray's been playing, there seems to be such that burning desperation for him that he could be very hard for either Raonic or Federer to beat in the final here at home.
It's fascinating, isn't it, Catherine? Hey, it's good having all these people on, isn't it, from the BBC and Telegraph, eh?
Getting predictions out of everyone, yeah, good work.
Oh, look, there's somebody over there. Let's see if we can get predictions out of that. Oh, no, they weren't running off. Russell, lovely to have you with us here on the Tennis Podcast. We get to commentate on all this tomorrow, don't we?
We do, yes. So we will know before long whether we are right or once again spouting utter nonsense.
Absolutely. Just one other quick thing that I found absolutely fascinating in Andy Murray's column on the BBC Sport website was how he basically revealed, Russell, his game plan for tomorrow. He said, I'm going to, you know, against Thomas Berdych, I have to use some variety rather than just brute force. Fascinating.
He doesn't often give too much away, does he? He's always very thoughtful in his responses, but I remember quizzing him in the past about how he beats Novak Djokovic, and he says he's working on certain patterns of play against him in training, but you know, he does keep normally very tight-lipped about it, but there are one or two clues. Maybe he wants to send a little message to the Berdych camp.
Yeah, I wonder what they'll do with that. Anyway, it's all fun and games. Hope you enjoy the tennis in the men's semi-finals. We certainly will. Russell and myself will be commentating on BBC Radio 5 Live. What time are the matches going to start? 1 o'clock, aren't they, with Raonic against Federer?
1 o'clock, the first one, and then sometime between 3 and 5, I would guess, it will be Murray against Berdych.
So, take your radios with you, your smartphone apps, your iPlayer radio app. Have a watch of Live at Wimbledon. You'll see Catherine Whittaker interviewing the good and the great of the tennis world. And we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.